The Brussels government knew that this young man who was the bomber was a radical, but did nothing. What? WTF? In the aftermath of the Brussels bombing, we are learning many interesting things. First, did you realize that the Turkish government had informed the Belgians that the bomber who did this whole thing in the airport was an active terrorist? Is this even possible? Second, that vast swaths of Europe have been turned into Muslim ghetto no-go zones. Third, that Europe has apparently accepted there will be terror attacks and that so-called human rights are more important than saving the lives of their own citizens. Fourth, did you realize that there are 400-plus radicalized trained jihadists now ready to pounce on the West? How did we not see this coming? Some of us did. In conclusion, if we use the European model to deal with Islam, we are doomed. So what can America do to head off the threat? First, stop all immigration from Muslim lands until the system is fixed. Second, elect officials who take the threat of Muslim terrorism seriously instead of the sad sight we saw in Cuba with Barack playing all day instead of addressing seriously the terrorist threat. In fact, Obama won't even say Muslim terrorism, as you know. Third, we need to encourage citizens to carry weapons per their Second Amendment rights and train them also to spot terrorists. We need to train the entire country of America how to spot terrorists. Third, we must return to our ancestral beliefs that helped found this nation and study the rise of rights, laws, and freedoms. Then we will be prepared to compare this with the opposing religion, font of abuse, tyranny, inside a cult of death. The sad debacle of our boy president absurdly insisting on taking in an entire baseball game immediately after this bombing and then filming a ridiculous pantomime was disgusting and depressing. Does the boy king really believe that by burying his head in the sand, terrorists will really ignore America and only feast on Europe? Instead, Barack should face a public rebuke of failure to lead when he returns, enforced by an official censure to end his last few desultory months. And who will save us from this madness? Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, it's Kelly. And 609, I mean, I was really depressed when I saw what the president was up to. And he got up and gave his little speech, but he really refused to. I mean, this guy finds the place where what would be convenient for him crosses into what he supposedly believes is the right thing every single time. He only does what he feels like, and then he claims that that's the right thing to do, you know, so to give a short speech because we're not going to let Islamic terrorists push us around. As a matter of fact, we're not even going to mention Islamic terrorism because, you know, that's just who we are. And in the meantime, people are wringing their hands thinking, what is it going to take for America to seriously devote ourselves to fighting ISIS and, you know, going after these people? But, you know, the takeaway for me from this was the fact that Turkey knew that this guy was a terrorist and told Belgium. And Belgium did not stop this guy. They did not go pick him up because they couldn't prove he was a terrorist. I mean, what does it take? You know, does he have to wear a shirt? I'm a terrorist and I plan to blow you and your family up. It is just really so appalling that the level of leadership in the West is so bad. It's like everybody in the West feels guilty and secretly believes that they deserve to die. All of these leaders, you know. And in the meantime, you know, you've just got the worst. I mean, just to see Obama in this stupid skit, he does this skit, which I've got a video of this, although, of course, my computer suddenly decided to freeze up. But he's in this skit, and the skit is these Cubans come up to, or they're sitting there playing dominoes. And if you've been around Cubans, dominoes are a big deal. They're sitting there playing dominoes, and all of a sudden Barack shows up. I've got it here. It is just, he's doing this. You know what? The sad thing to me is, even though this makes him look like a fool, and somewhere inside he must know it, you know, it must have some connection to reality. He must look, understand he looks like an absolute clown to be over taking part in the wave in Havana during this baseball game, this three-hour baseball game or whatever. And there are people that have been blown to bits, including Americans. And not only does he refuse to go home, but, I mean, what would stop the guy from going back to his hotel and being in touch with the foreign leaders? Think about that. All of the time that he's not, that he's out in public, he's not talking to foreign leaders, the leaders of Belgium and France and Britain. And he's not talking with the anti-terrorism people here. And he just doesn't know how to lead. He's not interested in leading. And I honestly think that he believes in bureaucracy. He believes in, you know, he's a big government, one world guy. And somewhere inside of him, I've just noticed that he seems to believe that you don't need a leader because you have a system. And but he seems to be personally allergic to leading. So he spent all of this time in the presidency pretending to be a leader while the country's gone down the toilet. Anyway, here's Obama appearing in what is called a bizarre comedy skit during Cuba visit. Understand, this is right after these people have gotten blown up, and he's filming a pantomime, or what they call a pantomime in the UK. He's filming a little skit, and then he goes to a baseball game and sits there for hours and does the wave, and then he meets with Raul Castro. By the way, they're arresting people at the game for daring to protest the lack of freedom in Cuba, a country that we ask for no concessions from. Think about that. We're the most powerful country in the world, the most influential. We're right next door to these guys. We don't ask for a single thing when we go and normalize relations with these people. And then he's sitting there with this dictator. These people have killed hundreds of thousands of people from the stories that I've heard. And dissidents, the best people in the society, were rounded up and imprisoned and killed. And he's sitting there taking in this baseball game with this guy, saying, you know, what a great privilege it is. He is. So unbelievably, these people knew that this guy was a terrorist, but they let him go. Now, how is that possible? I mean, it almost makes it seem like that the West has lost its will to live, but why? I mean, you know, I have never seen anything like the incompetence level. You're letting all of these people in to your country for decades, and you know, then they're not integrating into society. They're not becoming part of the country. They're not learning the language. They're not embracing the culture, and especially they're not you know, the freedoms that the West represents. We act like we're embarrassed of these freedoms, which have absolutely, you know, revolutionized the world, the constitutionalism and the Bill of Rights and the freedoms, that freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and all these things. We act like we're embarrassed of these things. And, you know, so we're just waiting to be killed. It's like Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now, you know, just waiting for somebody to show up and put us out of our misery. Why? Why not fight for what we understand to be the truth, and to, you know, to I don't get it. I just don't understand this indifferent leadership from all of these people, the leaders of Belgium, the million Muslims brought in. I mean, how are you going to do a background check on a million people coming into your country? These people, you know, in Germany, these people don't even, most of them don't even have papers. So I just, you know, I don't get it. 523-1450. I don't get in 805-6180. I have the text. Inconceivable to me that they would be warned about this and they would ignore it. I mean, how do you, that's one thing. You run your country any way that you feel like it, but is there no responsibility? Is there no sense of that we owe it to our people to take this, you know, take this person out of circulation? I don't get it. I mean, it's sad when you've got the kind of leadership that obviously Belgium has, and whatever explanation that they have for why the person wasn't removed, whatever their reasoning was, I mean, it would seem to me that their reason was something along, you know, we couldn't prove that they were connected to terrorism. So you're just going to let them go and just live in this Muslim ghetto which is totally radicalized. And, you know, I cannot believe that they're treating their people this way. And we're doing the same thing here. We've got a president that is not even like mildly interested in putting up a show, putting on a, you know, letting them know that we're going to move heaven and earth to capture and punish these people. Anyway, I've got a little clip. Erdogan, who's the head of Turkey, claims Belgium was warned about Brussels attack. And I don't know if this is in English, but anyway, probably not.
Brüksel'de saldırganlar.
That answers the question. So anyway, let me get a little bit of Alex Jones on this. Just
again tonight with new news out of Brussels, we have more information about the suspects, and we see outrage as Turkish president reveals they arrested one of the Brussels bombers in June and deported him back to Belgium, and even warned authorities he was a militant. And we see that Belgian brothers were named as the suicide bombers who struck the airport and metro train. The taxi driver who took the terrorist to the airport reveals that a fourth suitcase bomb was left behind because it couldn't fit in the taxi. And the cabbie was suspicious after the attacks and led police to a safe house containing a fourth bomb, ISIS flag, and a suicide note. So very icy details on that.
All right. So, I mean, look, there is some sort of a failure. Number one, we're obviously lacking some sort of Europe, you know, Interpol is the police of Europe. but they're lacking some sort of a terrorist detail over there to really watch over all this stuff, because we see that Turkey, who's almost a member of Europe, it's kind of on the verge, but I mean, very, very, you know, warm relations with Germany and with other countries in Europe. And you've got these people giving information on it, and nobody's come out and said, no, you didn't tell us this. What Belgium is apparently saying is that if someone is identified as a terrorist by another country, we won't do anything about it unless they can prove it. Which, I mean, I just, you know, what is going on out there? And I look at the president and his just ridiculous activities. I mean, he makes himself look like a complete buffoon. I've always wanted to learn how to play dominoes. And I'm telling you, if you looked at this thing, you'd think you were watching Sesame Street, you know, childish and totally contrived little show. And, you know, that's the best the president can do during a terrorist attack. It's like, why did he take this job? I know that he wanted to so-called change America, but he doesn't have it in his DNA to lead. So why doesn't he just resign? He apparently doesn't enjoy the job that much. His wife complains about the job, and you know, they got their, I'm sure they wouldn't take their pension away, but I mean, just go do something meaningful, you know, leave, you know, you're not interested in leadership, and you apparently don't know how, and you don't see the purpose of defending America, because to you, America is a bad place. So leave, you know, I'm sure Joe Biden could do a better job than you, which is not saying much. But anyway, we'll take a break here and come back. I'm going to tell you about 400 trained jihadists that we've just heard about. 629 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM 1450, Las Cruces, KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. And we'll come back and hear about those 400. All right, so there is a snowstorm going on right now, and it dumped 18 inches in Denver. And that same snowstorm shut down 300 miles of highway in Wyoming, and now it's headed east, and it's got a lot of moisture in it. All right, I'm looking at this article here. Islamic State trains 400 fighters to target Europe in deadly waves of attack. And this is from the AP. The Islamic State group has trained at least 400 fighters to target Europe in deadly waves of attack, deploying interlocking terror cells like the ones that struck Brussels and Paris, with orders to choose the time, place, and method for maximum chaos. The network of agile and semi-autonomous cells shows the reach of the extremist group in Europe, even as it loses ground in Syria and Iraq. Now, think about this. You've trained a bunch of people, and they're sending them out like missionaries. You know, you head this way, this group goes over here, and just hang out and wait, gather your strength, and build up your supplies and weaponry, and then when it seems best to you, then go out and, you know, go out and bomb, kill, whatever. That's scary, because that means there's not a the head of the snake. These are cells. These are out there, and they're sleeper cells waiting to attack. All right. So the officials, including European and Iraqi intelligence officials and a French lawmaker who studies jihadi networks, describe camps in Syria, Iraq, and possibly in the former Soviet countries where attackers are trained to target the West. Before being killed in a police raid, the ringleader of the November 13 Paris attacks claimed he had entered Europe in a multinational group of 90 fighters who scattered, quote, more or less everywhere. So when they found Salah Abdeslam, this guy that they arrested, and then there 4 days later there was this attack, in Belgium. He claimed that he didn't know about this bombing at the airport. And if this report is true, maybe that is accurate. If they have him in custody, I'm not saying it is true. It sounds unlikely. But if they had him in custody and these guys decided to strike back, and I mean, you know, so that means any part of Europe is a potential target. And so they know that the guy in the white jacket, his bomb did not go off and he left. But I mean, you know, you're searching for one jihadist, but there's who knows how many there are over there in Brussels. And, you know, it is just so discouraging to find out that they knew. How do you run a country in which you know that there's a person, a foreigner living in your country who is an active terrorist, and you don't feel like you have the power or the right or the authority to go pick that person up or deport them? I mean, that's crazy. Oh, here's a report from the Belgian officials. Not only, quote, not only did he drop out of sight, but he did so to organize another attack with accomplices everywhere with suicide belts. Two attacks organized just like in Paris. And since his arrest, they knew he was going to talk. It was a response. So what if he was arrested? We'll show you that it doesn't change a thing. That's Absalom, said French Senator Nathalie Goulet. So they say there is 400 to 600 Islamic State fighters trained specifically for external attacks. In other words, in Europe and America, and some 5,000 Europeans have gone to Syria to fight. So they know that the bombing was done by two brothers. And the Islamic group ISIS described a secret cell of soldiers dispatched to Brussels for the purpose. So they're admitting that they did it. So anyway, it's just now this, and it's just so discouraging, but they say the difference between then and now in 2014 and now when we're first getting introduced to ISIS is the original ISIS fighters only had a few weeks of training. Now the strategy has changed, quote, special units have been set up, the training is longer, and the objective appears to no longer be killing as many people as possible, but rather to, listen to this, to have as many terror operations as possible so the enemy is forced to spend more money or more in manpower. I mean, that is just so scary. All right, so we'll take another break here, but in the dedication to Obama, learning how to play dominoes on national TV in Cuba, now he's down in he's down in South America dealing with other leftist governments. 639 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450. I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask you some tough questions and I want some response. Text me or call in. I want to know what you think we should do with these people that have recently arrived from places like Syria. Donald Trump says kick them out, return them home. Are we in danger? That's a rhetorical question, but what can we do about it? And are we going to be sitting ducks like Belgium, where we know that there are terrorists living here, but we don't feel like we have the authority to protect our own land, our own people? We'll be right back.
Lord have mercy, I said.
6:42, and do you think that America is doing what we should be doing, everything that we can be doing? And by the way, it's 45 degrees out there, but everything that we can be doing to protect ourselves. And, you know, if people are brought here from other countries with jihad histories, do you favor these people just be returned, or do we owe it to them? Do we owe it to ourselves, the world, whatever the argument is, that they have to stay here? I mean, that's one of the things that I've heard is, and I think there's a lot of presumptions out there that, you know, we have to act like Americans. And that's one of the things that that Obama has repeatedly said, although he apparently is not a fan of America. So I'm sure not exactly what he's getting at. But there is another report out there that has just come out that that these terrorists were planning on bombing a nuclear plant. So they were doing really anything they can to destroy and maim and kill, although Obama is claiming that they are not an existential threat, which is kind of a sophisticated way to claim that they're not a danger to us. Now, that once again is a lack of leadership. I mean, does anybody not believe that these people could get over here and do the same thing here, that they wouldn't, you know, immediately do it? I mean, of course not. So it is really discouraging to have this level of leadership and just feel like you're a sitting duck while the president, I don't know if you could explain to me exactly what is in the mind of the president that he would constantly take such an antagonistic view towards safety and this type of thing. But I've never seen anything. I've never seen an American president with the terrible attitude and antagonistic and childish too. You know, you look at him, he's over there doing the wave. I mean, what does he think that he looks like to the rest of the world? What does he think that he looks like to the leaders of these Muslim, or, you know, these Muslim groups, these terrorist groups? I mean, it would just seem like this guy's a sitting duck. And if we go over to America and attack them, he is going to get up and give a bunch of speeches on, you know, Islamophobia. And, you know, yes, it happened in Boston, and maybe it happened in Miami and New York and Seattle, but, you know, the average American's safe and we're doing everything we can. I mean, you can imagine the speech that he would get up and give. So it is just beyond discouraging. Now, Brussels bombers did plan to attack nuclear power station as police uncovered 12 hours of footage jihadists filmed outside a plant director's home. And this is the claim. This is like something from a James Bond movie, that ISIS terrorists are believed to have wanted to kidnap the director of a nuclear power plant to force him to gain entry. And the footage was the Bakrawi brothers, those guys that blew themselves up in the airport. So they were serious jihadists. And wow. So, I mean, what if they had blown up the nuclear power plant? I mean, you know, I'm sure if you heard about it, you know, it's not that big of a danger, blah, blah, blah. Let's take a little break here. I'm trying to get a clip for you. I've got all kinds of computers. All right, so had to reboot there a little bit, but here's a response from a couple of years ago from your president.
At the same time, we have reaffirmed again and again that the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam. Islam teaches peace.
Islam teaches peace, my friends.
President Barack Obama has criticized the efforts of some American politicians and media to portray a negative image of Muslims in the country.
And since 9/11, but more recently since the attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, you've seen too often people conflating the horrific acts of terrorism with the beliefs of an entire faith. And of course, recently we've heard inexcusable political rhetoric against Muslim Americans.
All right, so here's a little bit from Hannity and Gingrich. Gingrich asking, when will our leaders realize we are at war? I think that if a serious attack happened over here, you might have to almost remove Obama from office, because I don't think that he's capable of leading an attack against Islam. If there was a radical Islamic, you know, an incursion in here, he's so caught up in his ideas, he's so resistant, you know, for whatever reason. You can come up with your own reasons, but 523-1450, here's Hannity and Gingrich.
Now, welcome to Hannity tonight. In the wake of the deadly terrorist attacks in Brussels, Donald Trump and Senator Ted Cruz are calling on Americans to get much tougher in the fight against radical Islam. The Democrats, on the other hand, well, they'd rather be politically correct. Here's what Donald Trump said last night right here on this program.
The problem is we don't fight on the same level. We have laws that protect everybody. You know, you can't do this, you can't do that. Don't touch them, don't hurt them, please. In the meantime, they go around killing people. They have no laws. We have the laws to protect them. It's absolutely crazy.
I agree with you that we should use advanced enhancement interrogation techniques on him.
Hillary, beyond waterboarding.
Explain.
All right. So you catch the guy last week, and it looks like retaliation for his capture. If they would have put him through the grill 10 minutes after they captured him, he probably would have ratted him out and maybe stopped this horrible terror attack that took place today.
Now, Senator Cruz has also strongly condemned the terrorist attacks in Brussels and yesterday put out this statement saying, quote, that we need to empower law enforcement to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. And earlier today, Senator Cruz doubled down on his remarks. Take a look.
You know, it has been interesting in the last 24 hours when I called for proactive policing directed at radical Islamic terrorists. The reaction from Democrats, Mayor de Blasio in New York held a press conference blasting me, attacking me. It's an example where Democrats are more concerned about political correctness than they are about keeping us safe. And that's why people are so fed up. We need a commander in chief whose priority is keeping the American people safe. And that's what I'll do.
Now, true to form, Democrats like President Obama and Hillary Clinton, they are ignoring the real threat that is posed by radical Islamists, and instead they're attacking Republicans. Take a look at this.
I hear somebody saying we should carpet bomb Iraq or Syria. Not only is that inhumane, not only is that contrary to our values, but that would likely be an extraordinary mechanism for ISIL to recruit more people willing to die and explode bombs in an airport. As far as the notion of having surveillance of neighborhoods where Muslims are present, I just left a country that engages in that kind of neighborhood surveillance. The notion that we would start down that slippery slope makes absolutely no sense.
What Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and others are suggesting is not only wrong, it's dangerous.
All right, here with reaction, author of the New York Times bestseller Duplicity, former speaker.
Doesn't Hillary Clinton have the worst voice you've ever heard? It's so unnerving and just unsettling to hear her voice at any time, but especially in the morning.
The House Fox News contributor Newt Gingrich, Mr. Speaker, you know, this is very interesting. I think this is a very key moment because Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are saying, we've got to keep the borders open. They're also saying we can't use enhanced interrogation. We have Abdullah Salam, the guy, the evil mastermind in Paris. He's in jail. He probably knows where terrorist cells are. not only in Belgium, but all across Europe, and yet we won't use enhanced interrogation attacks. Seems to me the American people have a choice on a very important issue of our time. What's your reaction?
Well, first of all, I think that the seriousness of the threat becomes more obvious every month. You have bombings in Paris. You have bombings in Brussels. You have knifings in California recently. You had 14 Americans killed in California a few weeks ago. I mean, go down the list of and ask yourself, how many times do we have to see this in how many countries, which includes, by the way, Mali, where there have been several attacks recently, includes parts of West Africa where there have been several attacks, includes Turkey. I mean, how often does this have to happen for our leaders to realize that we are at war, that the other side is currently winning, they are recruiting faster than we are killing them, and that all the rules of the game right now are peacetime criminal justice rules of the game, and they're not going to work. You're going to have to move towards a much more wartime footing of very serious surveillance. There's nothing wrong with saying that we can identify people who are dangerous, and when we do, we should track them and find out what they're doing and monitor them. I would recommend people go back and look at the period about 1938 to 1942 and look at the steps that were taken by the United States under a Democrat with a Democratic Congress to protect America. They took some very tough steps.
Let me juxtapose, I mean, with the carnage we saw yesterday and hundreds injured and 34 plus killed, I want to juxtapose that with the president. Now, after getting lectured by the murdering dictator thug Raul Castro about how we ought to improve America, then the president gave 51 seconds. That was all he devoted to the attacks in Brussels. And then he goes to a baseball game. While we're all viewing the carnage, there's the president of the United States next to a murdering dictator, drinking beer and doing the wave. Watch this. And then the president won't even acknowledge radical Islamic terrorism. He said they're the JV team and they're contained.
All right, so we're running out of time right now, but here's what the president was doing. Here's what he was doing while everybody else is worrying about getting blown up, radical Islam, et cetera. The president was in Argentina doing the tango. Now, I understand that the president can't work 24 hours a day. He's got to take a break. And I know that, you know, he can be doing something lighthearted while his staff is working on the issue, but he doesn't come across like that. He comes across like a person who thinks that if he acts like he's indifferent, there's nothing to worry about. Here he is. The president is dancing with somebody who looks like a tranny, to be honest. Probably is. All right, so the president is doing the tango. I guess he doesn't care. He must know at some level that he just looks like a complete bozo. Well, I guess I'll take you out with some tango music here. We'll be right back after a break on the hour. And I've got a little bit of history of jihad for you and a lot of other stuff to break up the action. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. All right. So in honor of Weird Wednesday, which did not go according to plan, but I do have a story for you. Woman dies in jump from moving golf cart in Southwest Houston. Houston, this is sad, but I mean, the way this happened is almost amusing. A 59-year-old woman died Monday afternoon when she jumped from a moving golf cart and hit her head on a curb in Southwest Houston. Now, listen to this. Police said the victim, whose name has not been released, was riding in a golf cart driven by another woman. Tim told the driver to slow down or she would jump off the cart. The driver told investigators she was not driving too fast when the other woman jumped. The victim then hit her head on the curb after she jumped, was taken to Memorial Hermann Southwest Hospital, where she was pronounced dead. Jeez. That's what I called bad luck. There is another story in here. It's if you're a romantic, prepare to be moved. Woman tracks down the sperm donor of her child, falls in love with him, and they get married. Isn't that touching? All right. So a few other headlines for you outside of this. All right. So Camille Paglia is saying that the reason that Trump is winning is the whole thing going on with radical Islam right now. And that she says, even though Camille Paglia is a liberal and she is also a lesbian, she says, this is why I'm not voting for Hillary. Now, Ted Cruz needs 85% of the rest of the delegates to win. Shadow campaign to deny Trump begins. I thought that was going on the whole time. And Batman and Superman, the movie, is going to have to bring in $800 million to break even. But apparently, it's not going to do that since people don't like it. Now, this is something that I mentioned at the time it happened, but I'll go back to it because it's in the news. Rams made deal with NFL to draft Michael Sam to avoid being featured on HBO series. So Michael Sam, this gay NFL player or would-be player, was drafted by the Rams, and he just didn't have the skill set to make it in the NFL. And then he was picked up by Dallas after he was cut, but he just didn't have what it took. He then went up to Canada to play in the CFL, and he never made it into a game because he left twice. Once because he had a fight with his boyfriend, and the next time was, I think he had it was a mental health break. So he's never going to play in the NFL. But I think it's interesting that both the Rams and the Cowboys made deals with the NFL to gain something for picking him up. And it's like, why does the NFL want to push homosexuality? I'm just curious. Why is it the NFL's business, you know, what the player's orientation is, and why do they try to turn it into a publicity coup, you know? I mean, I find so many of these, you know, that people want to know why America is going down the tubes. We're distracted from doing what's important by all of these stupid politically correct rules. And then we're not ready for when the Muslim terrorists show up, et cetera. So just, I don't know. I mean, I think what this country needs, 523-1450, if you agree to or disagree, 805-6180. What this country needs is a revival. If you got back to the basics of what we used to believe, what the original people who moved here, and which I'm, you know what, I still got to do the story on that for Kathy, the history of the beliefs of the colonists. I think I was supposed to do that today. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll bone up on that. But if we got back to what we used to believe, 90% of our problems would disappear, wouldn't they? All right, here's another story. Sea level has been falling on the Atlantic seaboard for the past 6 years. And this is from Stephen Goddard website. So what do you think about that? And then they include in the story Jim Hansen, scientist who in 1988 predicted greenhouse effect before Congress and said, is anything going to look different down there in 20 years? He looked for a while and was quiet and didn't say anything for a couple of seconds. Then he said, there will be more traffic. But the West Side Highway, which runs along the Hudson River, New York's Hudson River, will be underwater and there will be tape across windows across the street because of high winds. And when will this happen? They ask him 20 to 30 years. Remember this conversation that we had this conversation back at this time. And then they contacted him and asked him if he still believes these things. Yes. And he has no apology. Typical of these fear mongers, these end of the earth people. All right. So there is a very, very disturbing story out there. Fears grow for priest kidnapped by ISIS who may be crucified on Good Friday. And, you know, the last thing that I saw that they used to kill somebody, they put explosives. These ISIS people are geniuses at doing things that are just so terrible. You can't help but notice them. They put explosives around this guy's neck and blew his head off. That's the last thing that I saw. But they've got a father, a priest, Father Tom Uzhunalil. He was seized when four armed militants stormed an old people's home in Aden in Yemen March 4th, and they killed 16 people there. But they also took him they kidnapped him. And now they believe this Salesian priest, Father Tom, is going to be crucified on Good Friday. So Salesian priest is part of the, it was the Sisters of Sayesan who put out this information, but yeah, man, it's just so amazing what these people are doing. All right, here's a little bit from Bill O'Reilly. The question that I was asking on the issue of whether we have the will to fight these people off. If the Belgians knew that there was a terrorist living in their biggest city and they didn't do anything about it. I mean, and it seems like we're doing the same thing. We're not stopping. We're encouraging foreigners, illegals to come in over the southern border. And we're bringing in as many Muslims. Literally, Obama is bringing in as many Muslims as he can from foreign countries, and nobody's standing up to him. Check this out, Bill O'Reilly.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Destroying ISIS, does America have the will? That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Shortly before 8 a.m. Belgian time, two suicide bombers attacked the Brussels airport, setting off two explosions. Then a short time later, another bomb exploded in the Brussels subway system. At this point tonight, more than 30 people are dead, more than 200 injured, and ISIS claiming responsibility. Ironically, just last night on The Factor, my Talking Points memo partially dealt with that terror group. Right now, the jihad is on the move in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. President Obama has dithered, allowing ISIS and other groups to grow stronger. It's got to stop. Now, I've been saying for years that President Obama's strategy of containing ISIS is dangerous and puts the entire world at risk. The solution is to mobilize the NATO alliance against the savages and take the fight to them. Right now, many Muslim extremists believe the jihad is working, that they are winning an armed struggle against the infidels of the West. And it's not hard to see how that kind of propaganda takes root when ISIS and other Muslim extremists continue to kill at will. The USA and other powerful Western nations basically fighting a war of reaction, allowing ISIS to commit atrocities and then reacting to those atrocities, often with words, not action. That strategy has failed dismally. Here's the proof. Listen to what happened just last year alone. January 7th, Muslim killers murdered 12 people in a Paris magazine office, 11 others injured. 2 days later, four people killed by Islamic terrorists inside a kosher grocery in Paris. On March 18th, 22 people murdered by terrorists in Tunisia. June 26th, 38 people murdered, again in Tunisia. On July 16th, a Muslim killer murdered four U.S. Marines and a sailor in Chattanooga, Tennessee. October 31st, ISIS claimed responsibility for bombing a Russian airliner killing 224 people in Egypt. November 13th, ISIS savages attacked a concert hall in Paris, killing 130, injuring 368 human beings. December 2nd, 14 people killed, 22 seriously hurt, when two ISIS-inspired killers gunned them down in San Bernardino, California. And just 3 days ago in Istanbul, Turkey, a suicide bomber killed five people, wounding 35. So you can see how aggressive ISIS is. And we haven't even talked about the Muslim killings in sub-Saharan Africa. Hundreds, perhaps thousands, have been murdered there. And what has President Obama done about it? Very little. ISIS is not afraid of him. Today, the presidential contenders reacted.
We've got to tighten our security. I talked about our visa system and our passenger name system, but it's unrealistic to say we're going to completely shut down our borders to everyone.
We need to forge a coalition of the Muslim countries in the region, including some that have not been as active as they should be, with the support of the United States and other major powers to finally destroy this barbaric organization.
What Senator Sanders is really saying is we should abdicate our responsibility to defeat ISIS, transferring it to Muslim countries. Apparently, the man believes it is not our fight, despite the worldwide carnage. On the Republican side, reaction also came quickly.
You need surveillance. You have to deal with the mosques, whether we like it or not. I mean, you know, these attacks aren't coming out of, they're not done by Swedish people, that I can tell you.
I think we have been too lax, not aggressive enough against this kind of radicalism.
The attack in Brussels is in many ways the fruit of a failed immigration policy in Europe that has allowed a massive influx of radical Islamic terrorists into Europe.
Senator Cruz will be here in just a few moments. Now, as far as President Obama is concerned, I hate to use a cliche, but it's same old, same old.
All right, so here is something that the, here's what the president said about ISIS just 4 months ago.
Center in my exclusive interview with President Obama yesterday. When we spoke in the cabinet room shortly before the strike, the president acknowledged how difficult it will be to eliminate the threat from that deadly terror group. Even your friendly critics, Fareed Zakaria, says that what you have on the ground now is not going to be enough. Every couple of months, you're going to be faced with the same choice, back down or double down.
I think what is true is that this has always been a multi-year project, precisely because the governance structures in the Sunni areas of Iraq are weak, and there are none in Syria. And we don't have ground forces there in sufficient numbers to simply march into Iraq and Syria and clean the whole place out. And as a consequence, we've always understood that our goal has to be militarily constraining ISIL's capabilities, cutting off their supply lines, cutting off their financing.
But ISIS is gaining strength, aren't they?
Well, no, I don't think they're gaining strength. What is true is that from the start, our goal has been first to contain, and we have contained them. They have not gained ground in Iraq. And in Syria, they'll come in, they'll leave.
The president always acts like his opinion is apples and oranges better than anybody else. He's got all the information. He laughs at anybody who disagrees with him. You know, you notice how precise he is on his pronunciations of stuff. He's such a strange person. Anyway, we'll take a break here. I do have some criticism. You're not going to believe this of Ted Cruz. There's a theologian or a pastor of a megachurch who's come after Ted, or pardon me. Come after Ted and Glenn challenge their view of theology and presidency. We'll be right back and discuss that briefly. I've got a couple of clips on jihad just for a little information for you after that, and a few other stories. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE 523 1450 to call in 805-61802 text.
Lord have mercy. I said, whoa, down and over.
All right. Here's some headlines for you, by the way. There's a large exodus of Cubans to America going on right now. The border chief claims that the feds are fudging down numbers of illegals, that the numbers are breaking records, and the agents themselves have been ordered to change the statistics. There's going to be another summer surge. And in Texas towns, residents are scared and tired of illegals running through their streets. What do you think about that? All right, here was 523-1450. Here is Robert Jeffress. He's got a 12,000-member church down in Dallas, Texas, First Baptist. And he's going after Glenn Beck for some of the stuff that we discussed here on the show, because Glenn Beck, as you recall, rebuked or criticized evangelical Christians who live in the South and who are not supporting Ted Cruz. And Beck had said, all throughout the South, the evangelicals are not listening to their God, Beck said at a rally in Utah. And Jeffress said, Pastor Jeffress said, Beck's wacko comment speaks for itself. However, by using the phrase their God to refer to the God we evangelical Christians worship, Beck is finally admitting that the true God of the Bible is different than the God of the Book of Mormon. I congratulate Beck for his honesty in differentiating between the two, something that I had mentioned myself. However, I am somewhat puzzled that Beck claims to know how the God Christians worship would vote in the Republican primaries. And Jeffress is not officially endorsing any candidate, although he has introduced Donald Trump at some events. Beck, a Mormon, has endorsed Cruz, and he has spoken on his behalf at numerous rallies. All right, here's some more comments from this. Dr. Thomas Kidd, who is a superb historian on the history of Christianity, K-I-D-D, if you ever look it up on Amazon. Dr. Kidd says, assuming that Mr. Beck is referring to the evangelicals who vote for Trump, I would make a distinction that Beck does not. The Bible certainly offers principles on how to think about government and politics. The Bible does not, however, tell us which individual candidates to vote for. If other Christians don't vote for our preferred candidate, we should not say that they are not listening to God. None of us has special access to God's opinion about candidates, Kidd says. There are many reasons why devout Christians should hesitate to vote for Donald Trump, but God has not revealed Ted Cruz as the divinely anointed alternative either. All right. Now, here where it gets even a little more interesting, I think those are good points, but there is a lady by the name of Stephanie Scruggs, a resident of Pensacola, Florida, who was the national co-chairman of the Glenn Beck-inspired 912 Project. Now, listen to what she says here. Say what you want, but as a Southern Christian, I'm pretty sure my God doesn't like politicians behaving like diamond pinky ring wearing TV preachers, telling lies and trying to guilt people into donating their dollars to false causes. And another lady by the name of Elizabeth says it has been very disconcerting to see Beck traveling with Cruz. I have a nagging concern about Cruz's integrity. His association with Beck confirms this. And Beck is not reticent about pushing his Mormon faith, which from an evangelical perspective is heretical. Apparently, Cruz has no discomfort in participating. Cruz has no discomfort in being called the fulfillment of false prophecy. That evangelicals have not fully embraced Cruz, but Mormons have, is troubling to someone who voted for Cruz but now questions that decision. So somebody else says, I tuned Glenn Beck out a long time ago. I think he has issues and is in no position to determine who is or who is not listening to God. And so anyway, you've got this just one more time. I'm just so fascinated that I'm not really fascinated by Beck. I mean, Beck is as I've stated on this show before, in terms of technique, his voice, his mannerisms, absolutely riveting performer. And yet, he has been pushing the daylights out of Cruz. And also, along the way, he's been pushing his own belief system, Mormonism, and only recently started talking about the fact that his beliefs are Mormon. And I just found it very weird how he has stood up. This is the first person that I've seen stand up against what he is saying and to claim that, you know, he's not speaking for Christians because as a Mormon, he has a different God. And that's one thing Jeffress said. Here's a little clip from him.
I'm going to be in Arizona and Utah this weekend for the campaign. And I'm doing it because that's what I can do. Others can do whatever it is you do, but even if it's one person, you be bold. We're on the Titanic. It's going down. Knock on every single door. They don't want to come? Fine. Don't waste time. The Titanic is going down. But you knock on every single door. Can I tell you about the truth? Can I tell you about the truth? Can I tell you about the truth? Because here's what's coming. Here's what's coming. They don't want to hear it to them. But remember what Ezekiel said. Ezekiel, you will be held responsible. This is the thing I don't understand from religious people. I just don't get it. To much, we've been given much. Much is required. Required, not expected, required. Beyond that, Ezekiel talks about these times and says, basically, everybody in your own way, you're a watchtower. You're a watchman at the gate. And the blood of the people who could have been saved. Now, think of this, because we're talking about the rights of all mankind. If America goes down, this isn't hyperbole anymore. This isn't like a famous Reagan speech that he gave. If we go away, where does anybody go? This is real. If we go away, where is freedom? So all of the freedom that will be lost, all of the lives that will be lost because we refuse to pay attention on our hands.
All right. So, I mean, there is this kind of interesting thing that's going on. And I wonder if somebody else was doing it, what Beck would say, you know, that you've got a guy that comes along, he's a talk show host and says, you know, that I'm praying to God. And basically, you know, you've heard it on the show that Beck has said, I really felt the spirit. And then, you know, I know what I'm saying is true. And I'm not claiming to, I mean, this is a funny thing. I'm not claiming to be a prophet or speak for God, but, and then he, you know, all he does is speak for God. And then he's saying God's disappointed in Southern evangelicals who don't vote for Cruz. It's very weird. You know, we're just not used to this in American politics. And the fact that Cruz goes along with it and doesn't say anything about it, I find also notable, because if he's even as evangelical as I think he is, it would be strange. But, you know, I'm sure that he's got his, I'm sure that he's got his explanations. He's a very bright guy. But I was eating lunch with a friend of mine yesterday who said, this is a guy that he's a very upbeat guy. He's one of my good friends and doesn't really take pot shots at people, but he just out of the blue said, you know, Ted Cruz reminds me of a psycho. And I said, why do you say that? And he's laughed and he said his expression never changes. And I thought that, you know, that's pretty funny. We got some texts coming and finally some people are waking up out there. But I find I find Glenn Beck to be absolutely riveting. So listenable. He has latched his wagon to a star. Good for him. But he's speaking for God and he's doing it out of a religion that the vast majority of Americans would say is not only not Christianity, but a lot of people would say it's a cult. And I'm a little bit hesitant to really pound Mormonism because I've got some good friends in town that are Mormon. And also that, you know, most of the Mormons that I've known have been pretty good hearted people. And I would say, you know, from my perspective, sincerely mistaken, you know, they're very sincere people. But all right. So I'm going to come back. I've got a little clip for you on jihad. Maybe we can understand it a little bit better together. Anyway. Some Van Morrison Domino in honor of the fact that the president would rather play dominoes on public television in Cuba, because that's all I have, as opposed to getting down to brass tacks on terrorism. 734 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450, 805 6180 to text. We'll be right back. All right, so I've got this little clip here. Now, I just want to tell you ahead of time, I've got all these clips where Obama says Islam is peace and all these things. And there is this myth out there that Islam is responsible for an enormous amount of learning. And I'm amazed at the number of people who believe that Islam is a great creator of intellectual activity in the history of mankind, because as far as I've been able to ferret it out, it's simply not true. For example, he states that the Muslims created algebra, which is algebra itself is a Muslim word or a Arabic word. It is an Arabic word, but they didn't invent it. And all of these claims, everything that they claim to do, you can trace it back to somebody else. For example, the roots of algebra come out of Greece, and then they're developed in India, basically. And so, you know, they're precursors in modern algebra comes out of Europe, but Islam simply did not create algebra. And here's one of the things, and I've got a book that is, I think I've mentioned it on the show before, The Doctrine of the Acceptable and the Unacceptable. That's not the actual title. I can't remember the title, but that's the sentiment. The Doctrine of the Blessed and the Not Blessed. Basically, Islam has an inverted view of life, in that you're only supposed to do the things that are blessed by Allah. And so it doesn't sanction, it doesn't bless innovation. So there's been no innovation in the religion for how many centuries. And you know, the food they eat, the clothes they wear, the cars they drive, all of these inventions and the internet and everything, the oil exploration and development that has made them rich come from the West. And that's one of the main frustrations in Islam, is this sense within the Middle East, within these cultures, that they're absolutely static, that they're, you know, all growth comes from the outside because, you know, Satan is torturing them or whatever, or Shaitan is the, what they call it. But anyway, check this out.
It was Islam at places like Uluzab.
And I just want to mention one more thing. Islam did come across vast stretches of land around the Mediterranean. And about 100 years it took them to go from Muhammad's homeland through the Middle East and then through Africa, the north of Africa, and then into Europe. And so the places that they went, like Turkey, that were collapsing, they preserved their institutions of learning. But the Muslim mindset is, from what I've seen, not a mindset of innovation and creation. And in that sense, here's our great prophet, though, Obama,
that carried the light of learning through so many centuries, paving the way for Europe's Renaissance and Enlightenment. It was innovation in Muslim communities.
The president doesn't appear to do a lot of outside reading, in my opinion.
It was innovation in Muslim communities that developed the order of algebra.
No.
Magnetic compass and
navigation. No.
Our mastery of pens and printing.
No.
Our understanding of how disease spreads and how it can be healed.
Absolutely not. What is this guy talking about?
Islamic culture has given us majestic arches and soaring spires.
That may be true. But, well, you know, there can be no representation in Muslim art, so they focused on designs.
Timeless poetry and charity.
But they didn't invent the arch. The arch was invented by the Greeks and perfected by the Romans.
Music, elegant calligraphy, and places of peaceful contemplation.
Places of peaceful contemplation like the Brussels airport? All right, here we go. Here's a guy, an honest Muslim. He's one of the chief Muslims in the UK, and he's admitting that Islam represents death.
W. Bush and Barack Obama have declared that Islam is a religion of peace. Anjum Chowdhury begs to differ.
You can't say that Islam is a religion of peace because Islam, it does not mean peace. Islam is, it means Islam submission. So the Muslim is the one who submits. You know, there's a place for violence in Islam. There's a place for jihad in Islam.
Chowdhury is the leader of Islam for UK, a group recently banned in Britain under the country's counter-terrorism laws. He wants Islamic Sharia law to rule the United Kingdom and is working to make that dream a reality. He's seen here converting a 10-year-old British boy to Islam.
Allah.
Allah.
Let me ask you one thing. When you hear these stories, something I mentioned when ISIS first hit the scene, I had mentioned to you from my study of Sharia, is ISIS is completely Sharia compliant. And when you see that they have taken these young girls, these young teen girls, and have raped them and turned them into wives, and then when they get bored of them, they sell them. And these girls are so tormented that they're willing to kill themselves as opposed to be these jihadi brides. And all the other things they do, beheading children and raping, plundering, and stealing and all this stuff. Does that really represent God in your mind? I mean, in what universe would God make himself be pleased with expressing himself that way?
Islamic radicals in the United States are usually pretty savvy. They wear suits and ties. They speak, at least publicly, in moderate tones. But here in London, it's often a different story.
Anjum Chowdhury has praised the 9/11 hijackers and called for the execution of Pope Benedict. Chowdhury told CBN News his group is a nonviolent political and ideological movement that resides in the UK under a covenant of security. Yet he openly praises violent jihad.
The Quran is full of, you know, jihad is the most talked about duty in the Quran after tawheed, belief. Nothing else is mentioned more than the topic of fighting.
Several former members of Chowdhury's group have been arrested on terrorism charges.
It's a very significant number of former al-Muhajirun people were involved in terrorist plots against this country. A number of people have actually gone to Afghanistan, joined the Taliban, and died fighting for the Taliban.
Chowdhury refuses to condemn acts of terror, including 9/11 and the July 7, 2005 London bombings, which killed 52 people.
All right.
What were your thoughts on the 7/7 bombings? Did you condemn them? Did you support them?
Well, for the people who carried out, it was legitimate. If you look at the will of Muhammad Sadiq Khan and Shahar Tanveer, they will justify it, and they will bring many verses from the Quran and many statements to say that that's the Islamic argument. And it's a difficult Islamic argument to refute. And there are many scholars who support that argument as well.
Islam has, when it went around the world, I was telling you about it, it went around the world in where it established itself. It did so by the sword. It didn't go there. The difference between Islamic proselytizing and Christian proselytizing in the spread of the faith is that Islam only wants you to bend the knee to Allah. It's a political system with a religious veneer. So it conquered all those countries, and the people bent their knee and admitted that Allah was the head of the state, where they were killed. Now, they could remain as Christians or Jews if they paid a poll tax, a jizya. But anyway, I've got some texts here, and just read them for you. I hear Obama loving on the Muslim inventions, and it sounds like a parent building up his children's low self-esteem. They need to be built up in his mind while the extremists think of new ways to instill hate and terror in the souls of good people everywhere. And if you're an evangelical, you couldn't stay quiet while Beck pushed his false religion in promoting your candidacy. And if our government refuses to do its job and protect us, then it's time for we the people to do it ourselves. We need to arm ourselves legally and be prepared to fight back, folks. Why is it in the liberal world, why is it a crime, a sin, an embarrassment, a shame to have a gun to protect yourself or your family? I mean, I've never... It's Kelly here, and if you're listening, if you're going online to listen to Blog Talk Radio, I've been having some problems with it, so I listened to the last one, and it was all sped up. It was actually kind of cool to listen to. There was no nothing to hear. There's just, it was like I was, you know, breathing helium or something. But so getting the phone cut off. So just, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to try to reboot the whole system on Friday and get it going again. Here is Peaceful Muslims, Peaceful Islam. And this is from Political Islam site on YouTube.
Have you ever heard this argument? Islam can't be violent because I know a lot of Muslims and none of them are violent, so Islam must not have included violence. Well, this confuses cause and effect. Islam creates Muslims. Muslims don't create Islam. What a Muslim can do is not to practice part of Islam, but that doesn't mean that Islam just can be changed by any particular Muslim. So the study of Muslims to learn about Islam, I call Muslimology. And you can't really learn anything because you'd have to talk to all 1.5 billion Muslims before you could say, all right, I know what the practice of Islam is. But the practice of Islam doesn't say anything about what the real Islam is. Nothing changes the doctrine. The doctrine includes jihad, and nothing can change that. Just because you know some Muslims who aren't violent doesn't mean that the doctrine of jihad is not there. Now, let's be clear about the doctrine of jihad. There are four kinds of jihad. Most people, when they think of jihad, just think of what I call jihad of the sword, violence. Well, there are three other forms of jihad, and those are jihad of money, speech, and writing. I sat in a mosque in Southern California and watched nearly $20,000 be raised in less than 20 minutes for the purpose of lawfare. That is, using the legal system to harass people such as myself. A lawsuit is launched. There's a lot of money spent on attorneys, but the case never goes to trial. This is lawfare. It is a form of jihad. The Quran is quite clear on this, that those who donate money to jihad derive just as much benefit in Allah's eyes as does those who actually destroy. There's the other form of jihad is speech. When someone tells you, oh, and they're a Muslim, well, Islam is the religion of peace. That is an act of jihad because it is deceptive. It doesn't include the whole truth. Then we have the jihad of the pen, in which maybe it's just a letter to the editor. So jihad can be practiced four different ways. Now let's ask ourselves the question, what is the purpose of jihad? The purpose of jihad is to bring about the Sharia. So in America, according to a Pew Research poll, over half, 51% of the Muslims polled in America said they want the Sharia. So this even wanting of the Sharia steps into the arena of jihad. So all of the subtle pressures, let me give you an example of an act of jihad. A Muslim at work complains that people are heating up pork barbecue in the kitchen microwave. Well, you see, the smell of the pork offends the Muslim. And so he goes to Human Resources and says, you know, the smell of pork in the microwave is offending me, and I want it to stop. And Human Resources issues a directive that says, okay, henceforth, you can't microwave pork in the company microwave. The complaint about the pork sausage is an act of jihad. So before you say that a Muslim is not practicing jihad, maybe you need to practice and do some study of Islam so that you know what jihad is and what it is not.
And that's probably best given to the president. Check this out. The jihad triangle.
These are one-dimensional, but if you put several lines together in the right way, a second dimension emerges, something more complex than any of the individual lines. Human beings are complex creatures. We make decisions based on a variety of factors, genetics, upbringing, feelings, beliefs, desires, and so on. Much of what we do can't be explained in terms of one specific factor, so one-dimensional explanations of our behavior are often misguided. Take jihad. What causes jihad? Is it poverty? If so, shouldn't we see jihad among all poor people, whether Muslim or not? Is Islam the cause? If it were, wouldn't everyone who believes in Islam be a jihadist? One-dimensional explanations won't help us understand jihad because it isn't the result of one factor. It's the result of three. If you're missing any of the three factors, the new dimension doesn't emerge. But when all three come together, they form what we'll call the jihad triangle. First factor, belief in Islam. To become a jihadist, you have to believe that there is no God but Allah, that Muhammad is his messenger, and that you have access to the commands of Allah and Muhammad. Islam is foundational because if you don't believe in Allah, you're not going to wage jihad for it. You might fight for other things, but it won't be jihad. Second factor, knowledge of what Islam commands. You can believe in Islam without knowing that Allah commands Muslims to fight those who do not believe in Allah, or that Muhammad declared, "I've been ordered to fight people till they say there is no God but Allah." When I quote these passages to westernized Muslims, they generally have no clue what I'm talking about, even though I'm quoting Allah and Muhammad. But the jihadist is familiar with these kinds of things. Though jihadists aren't merely Muslims, they're Muslims who know that they've been commanded to violently subjugate unbelievers. Third factor, obedience. The world is filled with people who choose the path of least resistance, people who do whatever makes them feel most comfortable. But some people are wired differently. They are willing to do whatever they believe is right, regardless of the consequences. You can kill them, they won't back down. This character trait, when combined with certain noble values, gives rise to heroes, men and women who will lay down their lives to help others. But when it's combined with belief in Islam and knowledge of Allah's commands, it results in obedience and a willingness to fight the unbelievers and the hypocrites and be unyielding to them. So belief in Islam by itself doesn't produce jihad. Knowledge of what Islam teaches by itself doesn't produce jihad. Obedience by itself doesn't produce jihad. Any two of these factors combined without the third won't produce jihad. You can believe in Islam and be thoroughly willing to obey Allah as long as you don't know that he commands you to wage jihad. You can believe in Islam and know that Allah commands you to wage jihad as long as obeying Allah isn't a priority. You can know what Allah commands and be the sort of person who's willing to lay down his life for what he believes as long as you don't believe in Islam. Once we understand that the triangle requires
All right, so the computer just kicked up